Mr. Speaker, yesterday for the first time we got to know the names of some of the 16 investors, including hedge funds, who were given preferential access and sold one third of Royal Mail shares. Mr. Speaker, how are these lucky few chosen?
What we're talking about is an exercise in privatising the Royal Mail, which has been a success for our country. A business that lost £1 billion under Labour has now paid money back to the taxpayer, is making profits, and the people we should be praising are the 140,000 employees of Royal Mail, who are now, under this government, shareholders in the business they work for.
No answer to the question, Mr. Speaker. The Royal Mail share price is currently 50% above the level it was sold at. Only he would want congratulation for losing the taxpayer £1 billion. Each of these chosen few investors were given, on average, 18 times more shares than other bidders, on the basis that, in the National Audit Office's words, they will provide a stable, long-term shareholder base. And in the words of the Business Secretary, not be spivs and speculators. Can the Prime Minister tell us what assurances, in return for their golden ticket, these investors gave us that they would hold the shares for the long term?
First of all, he says that people were given shares, they paid for shares. Second, he raises again this issue that there was some sort of agreement. There was no agreement. But at the end of the day, he should be recognising that a business that lost money, that he tried in government to privatise but failed, is now in the private sector, making money, succeeding for our country, and its employees are now shareholders. Isn't it interesting that with the growth in our economy, the fall in the unemployment, the reduction in the deficit, he's reduced, like old Labour, to complaining about a successful privatisation?
No, Mr. Speaker. I'm raising an issue about a rip-off of the taxpayer, which the British people know when they see it. And the reason this matters is because the...
The orchestrated barracking is very predictable and also incredibly tedious, but it won't stop us getting through. It will just take a bit longer. People can calm down, take a tablet if necessary. Ed Miliband.
Matters is because the sale was grossly undervalued. Shares sold for £1.7 billion when they were sold at privatisation, now worth £2.7 billion. And who cashed in, Mr. Speaker? 12 of the 16 so-called long-term investors made a killing worth hundreds of millions of pounds within weeks. Now, yesterday, the representative of the bank that sold the shares said there was an understanding, and I quote, with those investors. He said there was an understanding, that's what it says on the record, Mr. Speaker, with those investors about their long-term commitment to Royal Mail. So why were they allowed to make a fast buck?
Yes. Isn't it? We're getting lectures on taxpayer value from the people who sold our nation's gold. Budget deficit after the biggest banking bailout in Britain's history. But I have to say, Mr. Speaker, these are exactly the arguments that Michael Foot made about the privatisation of the National Freight Corporation. They're exactly the same arguments as Neil Kinnock made about British Telecom and British Airways. It pleases the backbenchers, it excites the trade unions, but it's utterly meaningless. Is he recommitting to renationalising the post office? No, of course not. It's just playing to the gallery because he can't talk about the success of our economy.
Mr. Speaker, he should listen to members of his own side, the member for Northampton South. What did he say yesterday? This privatisation had let people down, and the interests of the taxpayer were not taken into account. He called it unethical and immoral, and he's nodding his head, Mr. Speaker. That is what his own side thinks of it. Now he talks about the postal workers. He talked a lot about the postal workers, Mr. Speaker. So this is very interesting. There were no conditions on the hedge funds, but there were conditions on other groups, like the postal workers. Can he explain why postal workers were told they couldn't sell their shares for 3 years, but hedge funds were told they could cash in on day one?
The post office workers were given their shares, and it's right that they were given their shares, and let's celebrate the popular capitalism. Let's celebrate. I thought he believed in empowering workers. We've now got 140,000 workers who've got those shares. Now, in terms of the risk to the taxpayer, he ought to reflect on this.
Order, there's far too much noise in the chamber. Miss McTaggart, I say to you, you're an illustrious product of the Cheltenham Ladies' College.
A lot of history in this shouting, because of course in the past, with all these privatisations, we had the shouting of the Kinnocks, the shouting of the Prescotts, the shouting of the Straws. Over Easter I was looking at Labour's candidates, and son of Kinnock is coming here, son of Straw wants to get here, son of Prescott wants to come here. It's the same families with the same message. It is literally the same old Labour. That is what is happening. Now, he asked about... taxpayer value. This is what the National Audit Office found. The National Audit Office said privatisation has reduced taxpayer risk to support the Universal Postal Service. This is a good deal for taxpayers because this business was losing £1 billion. It is now making money, paying taxes, gaining in value, good for our country, but bad for Labour.
Speaker, the post office is actually making a profit when they privatised it. And what have we discovered today? It's one rule for the postal workers and another rule for the hedge funds. And Mr. Speaker, who runs these hedge funds? They've been very coy about who runs these hedge funds. None other than the Chancellor's best man runs one of them. So why is it, Mr. Speaker? It's one rule if you deliver the Chancellor's best man speech, and it's another rule if you deliver the Chancellor's post.
What this shows, Mr. Speaker, he can't talk about the deficit because it's falling. He can't talk about the economy because it's growing. He can't talk about jobs because there are 1.5 million more people in work. So he is painting himself into the red corner by only talking about issues that are actually successes for the government, but appeal to the trade unions, the left-wingers behind him, and the people who want to play the politics of envy. That's what's happening in British politics. Everyone can see it. Nothing to say about the long-term economic plan that shows Britain is on the rise and Labour is on the slide.
And, Mr. Speaker, what we know is there is a cost-of-living crisis in this country. There's a cost of living crisis, and why not? Because they stand up for the wrong people. The more we know about this privatisation, the bigger the fiasco it is. A national asset sold at a knockdown price, a sweetheart deal for the city, and the government totally bungled the sale. Everything about this privatisation stinks.
Six questions and not a mention of GDP, not a mention of what happened while we were away in terms of employment figures, not a mention of the fact the deficit is getting better. We know, Mr. Speaker, he's got a new advisor from America. Yes, he has, Mr. Axelrod, and this is what he's being advised to say. Let me share it with the House because I think this is excellent advice. He says this: there's a better future ahead of us, but we must not go backward to the policies that put us in this mess in the first place. I don't know what they're paying him, Mr. Speaker.
Order.
But I haven't finished.
Order. To that question, the Prime Minister has finished, and he can take it from me that he's finished. Dr. Liam Fox!
Mr. Speaker,